going to try for 15. Back in the end zone. Fantuz, touchdown. Play action fake. Looking in the end zone. Tolliver, touchdown. Solely looking for Owens. Jump ball. What a catch. Did you see that? Back in the end zone, and he's got it. What a catch, Andy Fantuz, and he just kicked the Ticats into the lead. Here comes Voorhees, Courtney Stephen, fumble picked up by the Ticats. Hamilton has come up with the defensive play that's going to clinch the comeback victory.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
I don't know where to begin. If you would have asked me at halftime of that Edmonton-Hamilton game what we would be talking about right now, I would not say that we would be talking about a victory. I know we normally start off talking about our fantasy stuff and all that other sorts of junk, but we got to get right into this because that was the most incredible comeback this team has ever had in a game. They were down 31-6, really early in the third quarter. They come back and win this football game, 37-31. You were there. What was it like being there live for that massive comeback?
Well, me and my friend went down at halftime to get some more beverages or whatnot, and we didn't see the early third quarter touchdown by the Eskimos, but we heard the crowd go crazy, and we figured it was the touchdown, and we pretty much said to ourselves, oh, we'll just try to have a good time and sit in the sun and enjoy the rest of the game, even though we're getting thumped. And then it went on from there, and the rest is history, they say.
I've been to games where the road team has won. I was at the East Final when Hamilton beat Toronto. I've been to numerous games in Toronto and elsewhere where Hamilton has come out victorious. What was the crowd like? Did you feel something different when the momentum started to shift and Hamilton started to make the run?
Yeah, it got pretty silent. I mean, after the first touchdown in the third quarter by the Ticats, they got a little quiet, but they didn't expect for the Ticats to keep coming. So yeah, after the second touchdown, it got really quiet, and then they started to get nervous, and they kept pouring it on from there. You know, they had a chance to win the game at the end, and I thought they might, you know, march down the field and take away the victory, but it wasn't to be. So yeah, it got pretty quiet at Commonwealth, and being a couple of the only Ticat fans there, we were pretty loud, and everyone else was pretty quiet.
It's weird. When they kicked the field goal with, maybe a minute or so left in the game to take the 6-point lead, I just said to myself, this is where they're going to lose this game by 1 point. Edmonton's going to storm down the field. They're going to score the touchdown to win this game. And we're going to lose by one. And we're going to talk about how great the comeback was. But at the end of the day, they still lost. And we'd be having a much different conversation today than we would be that we are now. But then Edmonton did march down the field. That's the thing. Like, they did make plays and they got to around midfield. And then all of a sudden the defense was like, no more. And I think Edmonton took a couple penalties and then they get a sack. And then it ends with the hatchet job. The Courtney Stephen comes in, does the chop, gets the ball out, Hamilton scoops it up, and it's like, I literally stood up out of my chair and said, they won this game. I can't believe they won this game. Like, it was magnificent from being down so much. And the thing that I would say most is that when Edmonton came out early, like you said, and scored that touchdown right at the beginning of the second half, that is usually when this team, or any team really, would fold its tents and say, okay, you know what? It's not our day. And that was it for Edmonton. Edmonton did not come close to scoring from then on. Just incredible intestinal fortitude from this team all around. To make that comeback in less than a half, it feels like this could be a turning point in the season for this football club.
You'd have to think so. I mean, obviously the offense is a big part of this comeback, but the defense played a big role too with, just stuffing the Eskimos in the second half, not allowing them to score any points. So I believe they went on, 31-0 run or something like that. So, you know, the offense deserves a lot of the credit for this comeback, but so does the defense.
Okay, so let's start with the offense, then we'll get into the defense. So, obviously, the one place to start is with the quarterback. Jeremiah Mazzoli sets a CFL record for consecutive completions with 23. It was one of those things where I didn't really notice when I was watching that he was doing that, but then when they mentioned it, it was like, man, he hasn't thrown an incompletion in a while, and then it was 18, 19, 20, and then he sets the record, and it's like, holy smokes, like, this guy, when he is on, he is on. Like, we saw the 15 consecutive completions against the Argos in week one. We saw the 23 consecutive completions in this game. And if we look back to last week's show, I remember saying, and you can vouch for this, and anyone who listened last week can say the same thing, I said if Mazzoli can get some time, he can pick that secondary apart. That's exactly what he did. I don't know if Hamilton just found holes in the second half or what have you, but man, this guy just could not miss. And just, wow. Like, if this is his final start as a Tiger Cat, Claros is due back soon. What a way to go out. Pretty good swan song for the Hawaiian boy, eh?
I'd say, and I don't know if it was because the Eskimos were, you know, backing off in coverage in the second half because they had such a big lead, or what the deal was, because like you said, I didn't notice that he, you know, had so many passes in a row. I was just like excited to see that they were moving the ball and, you know, making the comeback. But I didn't know until after the game, actually. So obviously I wasn't watching on TV, so I didn't have announcers tell me what was going on. But I guess I should have picked it up that he hadn't missed a pass in so long. And 23 in a row. It's pretty incredible.
And the receivers, as good as Mazzoli was, you have to give the receivers some credit here too, because some of the catches they made, some of the, like, Terrence Tolliver made a diving catch to keep the streak alive. Andy Fantuz made a couple of beautiful touchdown catches. Luke Tasker just decided to catch anything thrown in his direction. So it was like, it's a conjunction thing here. Like, Mazzoli has all the completions, but he doesn't have those completions unless he has these sure-handed receivers. And the receivers came up big. Tasker, 11 catches. He was targeted 11 times, caught the ball 11 times. So he didn't drop a pass for 146 yards. As I said, Fantuz had two of the nicest touchdown catches I've ever seen. The first one when he does like the 180 spin to get to catch the ball in the end zone. And then the second one was a beautifully thrown pass by Mazzoli to the one spot on the field that only his guy could catch it, and Fantuz brings it in. And then, of course, how can we not talk about the absolutely incredible two-point convert catch by Chad Owens? Like, these guys came to play. I've dubbed these guys the Big Three, and the Big Three were the Big Three in this game. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that second touchdown by Fantuz, just the over-the-shoulder tips of the fingers catch. It was a hard one. Like, it must have been a hard one to make, but he did the job. I'm just looking at this first drive, like, after the touchdown by the Eskimos in the third quarter, and it's Tasker, you know, 11 yards, 13 yards, 8 yards, and then Fantuz 16, Tolliver 26 yards for the touchdown. So, you know, Tasker had a big part in that comeback. Like you mentioned the stats, 11 catches for 100 and whatever yards. So, you know, once again, he's just Mr. Dependable. And, you know, all three of those guys, all three of those receivers had a big role. And Tolliver had a big role too, coming back, scoring that touchdown pass, coming in replacing Underwood. And he had a pretty good first game back.
And we can't forget Brandon Banks, who had, I think, 60-something yards receiving this game as well. Made the nice catch to, I believe it was to tie the completion record. He had the one where he just goes across the field, and Mazzoli just had to hold on to it for like a split second longer. Finds him, makes the big, big run after the catch. It just seemed like whatever the team couldn't do in the first half, they just could do in the second half. It was magnificent. And we have to give a tip of the hat, of course, to the offensive line. Coming into this game, there was a lot of concern about the offensive line. I heard your appearance on the Eskimo Empire podcast, and one of the things you guys talked about was Hamilton's not great offensive line, how they've been. I think you guys were a little too harsh on them. I think they've been more hit or miss than bad this year, but Mike Filer was out. Matthew Gerard was in. First career start, going up against Odell Willis, Amondo Sewell, Eddie Steele, Marcus Howard. Like, you're thinking, even if Hamilton's offensive line is okay, that's a tough front four to go up against. They didn't give up a sack. You didn't hear Odell Willis's name. You didn't hear Sewell's name. You didn't hear Howard's name. Like, you didn't. They completely shut these guys down. And there were a few times in the game where Mazzoli was, like, rushed out of the pocket or got some pressure on him, but it was few and far between for most of the night, especially in the second half. Obviously, he had time to throw, time to make his reads. Just an awesome game from the offensive line.
Yeah, going into the game, the talk was Edmonton's offensive line has been so amazing this year that, you know, we figured that they'd be the stronger group, but not in this game. You know, zero sacks is the best you can do. So, yeah, I was impressed with how Gerard played in replacement of Filer. I'm just going off that no sacks. I mean, you'd figure this guy would give up one or two being in his first game. So, yeah, the offensive line was fantastic this game. And it's good to know that we have a guy that can come in and fill Filer's shoes when he's not healthy.
Now, I'll be honest. I haven't gone back and watched the game, but I don't really recall a moment at all in the game, even in the first half when they weren't playing that well, where Mazzoli was really, like, hit. Like, I don't think that they even got – like, they got pressure on him, but Mazzoli, because he can scramble, got out of it. But I don't recall him ever actually getting hit. His uniform, I'm pretty sure, was fairly clean at the end of that game. So, again, just what a great performance against an all-star-laden defensive line from Edmonton. So you want to talk some defense here, because I don't think they're getting enough credit for them. You mentioned earlier the Hamilton Ticats went on a 31-0 run in the second half of this football game, and you don't do that without the defense stepping up. So what did you see from the defense, especially in the second half, that you want to kind of give some mention to here?
Well, the second half, they really started mixing it up. I think they brought more blitzes. You know, Courtney Stephen had an awesome game. He had two defensive tackles, quarterback sack, and a forced fumble, which were on the same play, which sealed the deal for the Ticats. So big thumbs up to Courtney Stephen. I just thought that they played well the second half, and to not allow the Eskimos, who have been such a great offense this year, any points in the second half when they needed it the most, speaks volumes about this defense and where they're heading.
There were a lot of turning points in this game. We saw the offense make their moves. Defensively, I really do think that the turning point in this game was the hit that John Chick laid on Mike Riley in the third quarter. He came absolutely free. No one touched him, and he hammered Riley. It was one of the hardest hits I've ever seen. I believe it led to an incompletion, and I think the Eskimos punted after that. That's when Riley went to the sidelines and just ripped into his offensive line. I really think that at that point, the pressure that Steinhauer was bringing got into his head.
I heard about that. I didn't see it on the sidelines or anything, but yeah, I heard that he was cursing out his offensive line pretty good. So Riley was not impressed with what was going on in that second half, and they just couldn't stop it.
Yeah, he was ticked. Like they showed it on camera. He threw his helmet. He got in their face, and he was right to be mad. Like, you don't, if you're going to leave one guy on the field open to free rush, it should not be John Chick. And I'm telling you, man, this hit, holy smokes, one of the hardest I've ever seen. And just a nice, clean, like, shoulder-to-chest hit, and I really do think that rattled Riley. Like, the wheels were already starting to come off by then. I think at that point, the Ticats were down 11, but it was still... That to me was one of the major turning points, because the pressure just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, and they couldn't stop it. In the first half, like, Darrell Walker and Darius Bowman just absolutely did whatever they wanted. Most of the time it was against the rookie in the secondary, Travis Lee, who had a terrible first half, but again, didn't hear his name in the second half. Maybe, you know, the pressure obviously gets to Riley, doesn't allow the receivers to get open and all that sort of stuff, but yeah, just a great defensive performance in the second half, and I think it all starts with that John Chick hit. Just, wow.
Yeah, and I mean, look at the numbers for Darrell Walker and Bowman. 12 catches for Walker, 140 yards and a touchdown. 9 catches, 111 yards for Bowman and a touchdown. I mean, I'm willing to bet that most of that, if not all of that, happened in the first half. So they were on track, both on track for huge, huge games. And it just didn't click for them in the second half. And yeah, I mean, they could have both had 200 yards probably through the air, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, it's again, it just shows you how when the line and the front seven can get pressure, that it helps the secondary, and if the secondary can cover for a little bit, it helps the line. Like, it was an all-around defensive effort, because, like, there wasn't really one standout defensive player in this game. Like, you mentioned Steven, who had a really good game. I mentioned Chick. But, like, guys like Simone Lawrence, who's always making plays, not a ton on the stat sheet. It was just a good total team performance. And I think that's the big takeaway from this. If you look at the end of the game and you look at how this team won this game, it got contributions from everyone at the times they needed them. Even Brandon Banks in the return game had that big punt return. Didn't go for a score, but set them up, I believe, around midfield, and the Ticats would go on to score on the drive. So it was just a total team effort, and I think these are the type of wins that can really start to snowball and get the team going into the you know, after the bye week here.
Yeah, and if it is the game where Caleros comes back, I mean, we cannot complain with the 3-2 record. We're sitting, you know, we're a point behind Ottawa in the standings because of their tie. So we're sitting pretty good. You know, without Claros, we did pretty well.
We sat here last week and said even if they lost to Edmonton, we wouldn't be upset with a 2-3 record, we were saying. And we said all throughout the beginning of the season and in the offseason, 500 or so record, I'll be happy. 3-2, 1 point out of first place, and they've been playing their backup quarterback all year. I'll take it. Absolutely, I'll take it.
For sure. And, you know, special teams-wise, Brett Maher, he did pretty well. 3 for 3. 44 was his long field goal. On punting, he averaged 50.2 yards. Longest was 57 yards. So that's a pretty good game from him. So I continue to be happy with our punter / kicker.
Yeah, same here. He did miss that extra point. But it was on, I believe it was the touchdown. I believe it was Fantuzzi's first score, where it made the touchdown made the score 31-26. And I'm thinking, why not go for two? Because if you hit the extra point, you're down by
four.
Yes. So they would have been down by four. If they miss the extra point, they're down by five. Yeah. If they go for two, they would have been down by three. They miss it, they're still down by five. Down by four, down by five, you're in the same scenario. You have to score a touchdown, take the lead. Down by three, you kick the field goal to tie. I didn't quite understand why the Ticats wouldn't go for two in that situation. It was a little head-scratching. There's not much to dislike about this game. Like, we're going to gloss over a lot of the first half terribleness because of how great the second half was and how they got the win. But this was one of the rare instances in the second half where I think the team made a mistake.
Yeah, I think we questioned they didn't go for two in the last game at some point. We questioned that as well. So I don't know what's going on with the decision making on the 2-point conversions with the score the way it was. So yeah, it's a little bit of a head scratcher, but we got the win, so it's all good. But well, maybe in the future they should consider, when you're down by five or four, it doesn't really matter, to go for the two and make it a 3-point game.
Well, and it looks especially bad because Maher missed the extra point, so they were down by five anyway. So they would have been in the same position that they tried for the two or not. So it just, I don't know. It was, again, there's been some coaching decisions for this team this year that have left me scratching my head. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I know more about football than Ken Austin, because that would be absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, this to me was just another in the long line of some weird decisions the team made that I don't quite understand. But I'm not a paid professional coach. No one's ever going to pay me to coach a football team. So I'm not trying to say that I know more than the head coach of this football team, but it just made me wonder. And I did see some online chatter about why not go for two here. I even saw some online chatter about why not go for two earlier than this. So it seems to be that other people kind of tend to agree with us on this kind of weird decision making on the 2-point convert.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Gable's numbers and just the way the game went. He's not going to get a lot of touches. He only had eight carries for 35 yards, so, you know, not in the double digits like we like. And he only had one reception, too. But I can understand more in this game when they're down by 25 or whatever it was, not running the ball as much. So we'll give them a pass for this game, not give the ball to Gable a bunch.
You know what's funny? I had that written down, and I was like, you know what? I felt the exact same way. It's like you look at how the game was played out, it's understandable. You're down by 25, you're not going to run the football. So not using him, it's much better to have him back there blocking than it would have been to have him toting the rock. So again, completely agree with you on that one. It's entirely understandable why he wouldn't be getting the football much in this game. So anything else, any other takeaways from this? This was literally the biggest comeback in team history. We have never seen, no one who has followed the Ticats has ever seen this team come back from 25 points down. Any sort of like final thoughts or anything about this? Because this was history making. It literally made history.
John White's such a talented back, and we really shut him down. He only had 30 yards. So, with the way that the game was going, you'd think that he would have had a bigger game than up by so much. So they let a lot through the air, 354 yards for Riley, but really shut down that run game on John White. So, you know, Mike Riley had a couple carries for 24 yards, and Lynch was in there. He got 11 yards, but to shut down John White, he's such a talented guy, and I really like him as a running back. To only allow 30 yards is pretty impressive.
I'm also curious as to how many of Riley's yards came in the first half, because outside of that final drive where they drove maybe 35, 40 yards, I don't think he had much success at all in the second half. So again, it was a complete reversal. It was the Edmonton could not be stopped in the first half. Hamilton could not be stopped in the second. And we came away with a victory that, you got to steal wins sometimes. And this, to me, was a win that they stole. Edmonton should have, based on how they played in the first half, Edmonton should have won this game going away. So for the Ticats to leave Edmonton for the second straight year with a victory, maybe you're the good luck charm out there, man. Maybe it's you. Maybe you just got to keep going to all these Ticats-esque games, and you're the reason they win. You ever think of that?
We'll get one win a year if I keep going to those S games. But it's funny because every Edmonton game I've been to so far this year has been like the best game of the week each time. You have the Ottawa game the first week that went to overtime, Saskatchewan game went to overtime, and then this game. So, I've been getting my money's worth every time I've been going to that stadium this year. So it's been a lot of fun.
Jeez, you are one lucky SOB. That's pretty incredible.
It's been really good times.
Yeah, it must be fun living in a CFL city again, eh?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so we got to end this, as we always do, with the Jersey Watch, the Chad Owens Jersey Watch. So he didn't have a huge game against Edmonton, but now his season totals are 27 catches, 331 yards, 2 TDs. Those projected totals, 97 catches for 1,192 yards and 7 touchdowns. So he's now dipping well below the touchdown number, but he's still well above the yards number. So this is going to keep going. And honestly, after that catch that he made on that 2-point convert, I nearly went out and ordered one right away, because that was he's listed at 5'8". So that means he's probably closer to 5'7", maybe even 5'6". But he's listed at 5'8". Kenny Ladler, I believe, is who he outjumped for that ball, is listed at 6'1". Owens got higher than him by a good 3 or 4 inches. And he comes down with one hand, and it's like, all those years that he used to do that for the Argos, I used to get pissed off. I can kind of see why they liked him so much, because that was just awesome.
Yeah, it was a big play. I mean, that put him up by 3. And it was a spectacular catch in the end zone. I can't say enough about it. It was just a great effort from him. And, like you said, he didn't have a huge game, but that play alone was monstrous for the Ticats.
Yeah, it's still taking me a little bit. I'm still weirded out by seeing him in black and gold. But week in, week out, this guy does something that makes me go, man, I'm so glad that they signed him. And this week, just awesome.
He's so motivated this year, it seems. So he's been doing that his whole career, basically. But I don't know, man. This year it seems a little different. He's just got a extra jump in his step. He's even at the age of 34, he's really bringing it. So I just wanted to say that I was happy that the Ticats didn't, they just kept plugging away. They didn't panic. They just completed passes. They weren't going for the long bomb every time. They just played their game and plugged away, and they came back. So I was just happy to see that they didn't panic like most teams would.
Yeah, you're right. It was a lot of shorter stuff. It was maybe intermediate would be the better description. But they didn't just heave the long ball. There were a few deep passes. Don't get me wrong. Tolliver had the 26-yard touchdown. Fantuzzi's first touchdown grab was a deep one. But you're right. They just kind of kept plugging away, taking what was there, and the clock hit 0, and we have a 6-point victory, and it's just stunning. I sat and watched this game with my dad, and around halftime, we were just like, this team's garbage. Like, these guys are terrible. They're not going to win. Like, and he kind of does that every week. When the Cats lose, they're garbage. When they win, they're the best thing ever. He's one of those fans. But man, we were sitting here watching that, and it was just like, we were kind of going, okay, going into the second half, we're like, if they can just make this at least a little bit competitive, and even if they just keep going, and if they lose, they lose, because you were expecting it down, especially after the Bowman touchdown second, after thinking, okay, they're down 25 points. Like, they're not going to win this football game. It was just, let's make this competitive. And then it was like, okay, Tolliver has a touchdown catch. Okay, that's a good start. And then it was Owens gets the interference call in the end zone, and Matthews plunges it in. It's like, okay, this game's starting to go. And then Fantuzzi catches a touchdown to make it a 5-point lead for Edmonton. And it's like, okay, these guys might pull us out. And then it just snowballed from there. And I love watching games with my dad, because he gets really emotional. And it was just like, after the game, we were just kind of like, they won this football game. Like, we were stunned. That they won this game, and that's such a great feeling. It kept me kind of buoyant for the rest of the weekend. Like, I had a spring in my step because of this victory, and like, I don't tend to get too high or low when a team wins anymore. Like, I'm a little too old for that, but like, this was kind of like, okay, maybe this team can do something. Like, maybe this, like I said earlier, this is the start of something big.
And Theros is waiting in the wings, so we'll have to see what goes on with the decision making going forward with the quarterback.
Oh, you've been doing this for weeks now, man, with your segues into the next thing I want to talk about, and it's Zach that I do want to talk about. What would you do in this situation? We just saw Mazzoli go, I think it was 31 of 38. He completes 23 straight passes. They make this massive comeback. What do you do if Kolaros is healthy? Because we all thought, you and I and a lot of people, Ticat commentators, think that this game coming up after the bye week against Winnipeg, in Winnipeg, on the 3rd, is going to be Zach Kolaros' season debut. What would you do in this situation, and what do you think the team will do?
It's tough, because with Mazzoli, you don't know game to game what's going to happen. I mean, he can have a really bad game or, like last week, have a really good game. So I'm saying if Claros is 100% and he's ready to go, play him, because you just don't know what Mazzoli's going to bring game to game. So, but if he's not, if he's 99%, 98%, you know, leave him on the bench, because you never know what's going to happen with Mazzoli behind center. But yeah, if he's 100%, put him in the game.
Do you think he dresses for this game regardless, or do you think if they decide he's not going to start, and we will know if he's going to start by the end of this week when they get back for practice, do you think if it's now known, no, there's no way he's going to start this game, that he even dresses? Or do you think that maybe they make him the third quarterback and allow him maybe to get a little bit of playing time in there if the game gets out of hand either way? What do you think?
I think he'll be dressed either way. I think it's time for him to, you know, be dressed for a game, whether it's the second string or third string. I think he will have a Tech uniform on next week in Winnipeg.
What now? That's what you think could have. What do you think the team will do? What do you think, like, what you would do is you would play Mazzoli if Zach's not ready, and you play Zach if he is ready. What do you think the team's going to do? Do you think the team is just going to dress him and then we'll see what happens? Or do you think they know? Do you think they know by now if he's going to be ready to go next Wednesday?
Ooh, I think they'll know maybe midway into this practice week. I think he's going to play. I think he's going to be in there. I think he's going to be the starter, because that's, you know, he's off this sixth game. It's been, you know, a couple of weeks since they took him off. So with his extra bye week, I think he'll be in there and be the starter.
Okay. See, I'm really, really torn, because this bye week that they have is kind of a weird half bye week, because they play the Wednesday game. But then they get a full 10 days before they got to go to BC. So they almost get like a 1.5 week respite and then another, you know what I mean? Like, they sort of get a lot of time in between these two games. So I could see a situation where if he's not fully ready to go, that they just say, okay, we're going to hold you out for one more week, and then we're going to take a couple days off, and then he's going to be the starter, good to go right into BC. I could see that. But then that makes me wonder, why did they take him off the sixth game if he doesn't dress for any of the six games? I believe the rule is after the fourth week he's allowed to practice. So I don't know. I think that they have the belief, and this is what I said way back when he was pulled from the sixth game, is the belief is that he's going to start this game. I think I'm with you. I think Caleros is going to start this game. And the thing is, if he comes out and he is a little rusty and he's not great, you can always go to Mazzoli. Like, this is Caleros' team. There's no quarterback controversy here. This is not a situation like in Ottawa where Trevor Harris came in and absolutely lit the world on fire. And Trevor Harris is a proven starter in this league. So when Henry Burris got hurt and Harris did what he did, there was going to be a brewing controversy there if Harris, you know, Harris has gotten injured. So who knows what's going on there. With this, it's like, if Zach comes in and doesn't play great for maybe a half, Austin could pull him and say, look, okay, you got some game reps in you, you're a little rusty, let's see what Jeremiah can do. Like that can happen here, because if Zach gets pulled, there's going to be no calls in this city. Even if Mazzoli comes in, lights the world on fire, and they win, there's gonna be no calls for him to take over the starting job full time. Like, this is Caleros's team, obviously. So maybe start him, and then if things aren't going as you planned, you pull him. But if things, you know, they are playing Winnipeg, who is dealing with a rash of injuries, and just they can't even get out of their own way most of the time. This could be a really good game for him to come back and start again. So I think he's gonna play, but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point, if things aren't going as planned, he takes a seat on the bench and gets to watch as Mazzoli tries to do what he does.
Yeah, just take, you know, if it doesn't go well, you can go to the sidelines and take a look what's going on with the defense, and maybe, you know, just take him out for a series or something, I don't know, and then bring him back and see if he can do his old thing and be the Zach we know. But yeah, if I had to bet, I'd say Claros will be starting the game at Winnipeg.
And you know what, this team being 3-2 and a single point out of first place, now Ottawa and Toronto play this week, so that will change. Either Ottawa takes a bigger lead over the Ticats, or the Argos leap to first. Anything can happen. But I just think that with the team's record as it is, they can still be cautious. Like, if they were 1-4 or 0-5, then you're concerned and being like, okay, we got to get some wins here. That's not necessarily the case right now. Like, they're in a pretty good spot, and we've said this before, but where they are with their backup starting these first 5 weeks. So they can really afford to take their time. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm curious to see what the reps look like when this team, end of this week, beginning of next week, gets back on the practice field. But I brought up Trevor Harris. And once again, man, we are dealing with quarterback injuries. Like, is this just a replay of last year?
I hope not. There's the stars of the game. We need the starting quarterbacks in the league, even though we've seen some pretty good backups come in and do their thing. Yeah, it's just too bad. I mean, you know, they just seem to be getting rolled up on, you know, and hurting their knees or whatnot. Harris goes down and then third string quarterback comes in. He has a pretty good game, but that's probably not going to last. If Harris is out for an extended period of time and Burris is still out. So, yeah, it's not good to see. It's interesting for the Ticats because, you know, both the starting quarterbacks or backup slash starter goes down in Ottawa and Toronto. And that's kind of an opening for the Ticats, you know, to take advantage of that and get some wins with the backups playing on other teams. But it still sucks to see the stars of the game going down. You never want to see that. You want to see the best football on the field you can get. And that's not going to happen if the starting quarterbacks are injured.
Yeah, Harris goes down in the game against Saskatchewan. Ray goes down in the game against Montreal. And we've seen Darian Durant get hurt. Zach Collaros is still on the injured list. It hasn't been good for QBs. And it has to be. We need the stars of this league to be front and center. And Harris was the star of this league through the first four and a bit games of the season. And Ray is Ray. He sells tickets on his own. Like, I go to see football games because Ricky Ray's playing. And to see these guys go down, it just leads to poorer football. And as much as that, yeah, you're right. Harris down, Burris down, Ray down. Montreal is a show, so they're nothing to worry about, really. I still don't want to see the stars of this game go down to injury. You know what I mean? Because I want to be able to see the best players play. And if we're not seeing the best players play, the football's bad. And even if it's good for the Ticats that these guys get hurt, it's bad for the league. And I want the league to be better, not just my team.
I want to see the Ticats beat, you know, the best teams on the field. I want to see them beat the starters. You know, I don't want, you know, them to get to the Grey Cup or whatnot because they beat a backup quarterback. You know, I don't want any excuses. I want to see the best players on the field. So, yeah, it's I don't know what else they can do. I mean, they're trying so hard to protect these guys. Can't hit them high, can't hit them low, and it just keeps happening. So I don't know what the league can do, you know, allow holding on the offensive line. You know, I don't know. It's tough, and it just seems to be the way it is. The last couple of years in the CFL, quarterbacks just going down.
Yeah, and they all seem to be like kind of freak injuries almost. Like Harris gets spun around and his leg gets caught under the defensive lineman who's taking him down, and it twists and does whatever. And Ray was like, I didn't watch the Argos game, but I saw the highlights, and it was like, here's the play. Ricky Ray gets hurt, and I'm waiting. And then it's like, well, after he throws a ball that someone comes rolling into his leg, and it's just like, there you go. It's like, it's unfortunate how these things happen. But it is a part of the game, and we kind of have to deal with it. There's no way to protect these guys 100%. Guys are going to get hurt. It just sucks that it's these marquee guys, a second year in a row that we're losing, the faces of this league and the guys that sell the most tickets. You come to see offense, you come to see quarterback play, and two of the best quarterbacks. Harris was by far the best quarterback going. Him and Riley were in this battle of who's the best quarterback going right now, and Harris was definitely in that conversation. He was awesome for Ottawa since he came in for Burris in week one. And like I said, Ray's Ray, man. Like, if he's at the top of his game, there's few better. So it just sucks to see these guys go down. Hopefully, from the sounds of it, the Harris injury isn't as bad as it looked. A lot of people are saying, like, this could be Collaros-like. He could have torn something in his knee and he could be gone. But apparently that's not the case. Ray, after the game, they're saying it might be 4 to 6 weeks, which is not great, but it could have been a lot worse. So hopefully these guys can get back on the field and start slinging and start entertaining fans.
Exactly. I hope they're both back relatively soon.
Yeah, I hope they're both back in time for the Ticats to beat them.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so there was an interesting article that came out earlier today. We were recording this on Tuesday, about how the league has blocked the Saskatchewan Roughriders from adding Greg Hardy to their negotiation list. Do you know who Greg Hardy is? Do you follow the NFL and follow his nonsense?
Yeah, I know who he is.
Okay, so why don't you give people a little refresher course on who Greg Hardy actually is?
I believe he played for the Cowboys last year. He was with the Panthers. Had some domestic abuse issues, arrests, whatever you want to call it. You know, not a very good past, not a very good reputation, a troublemaker, not a good guy at all. So just a person you don't want on your team or in your league.
Okay, so let's call it like it is. He's an asshole. He's a complete and utter asshole. He had this domestic violence issue, and then he was completely unremorseful about it. Like, this guy is just a complete scumbag, and no, I don't want him anywhere near this league. I don't want him anywhere near any of the teams in this league. However, that said, this is it's obvious why the league is blocking the Riders from adding him to his neg list. And even if they add him to the neg list, it's not like he would play up here. It's just because you're on a negotiation list doesn't mean you're going to play in the CFL. But they blocked this because of the domestic violence issues in the past, and I applaud them for that. My issue, however, is there are a couple players who play in this league who have very high profile, or at least have domestic violence pasts. Chris Rainey of the BC Lions and Justin Cox of the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Rainey was released by the Pittsburgh Steelers in January of 2013 after he was arrested for battery, allegedly against his girlfriend. I don't know how that whatever stemmed from that, but he was let go. He had had a past. He was at the University of Florida, and he was charged with aggravated stalking at one point. So this guy has a past where hasn't been the cleanest cut guy. I don't really know how to put it. Maybe he's put that in his past. Maybe he's learned and moved on from it. And I hope he has. That's great. Justin Cox, in the last year and a half, has two domestic violence arrests. And again, these two guys are suiting up and playing in the CFL. And Greg Hardy is being blocked from doing that. And Ray Rice, another guy who had a very high profile domestic violence issue, was also blocked from doing this. Now, I don't fault the league at all for wanting to not have these knuckleheads in this league playing this game, but they're not consistent with their enforcement of this. So to me this stems from, because Rainey and Cox's weren't as notorious, their mm-hmm. issues weren't as notorious, so it wasn't like Chris Rainey signs, Justin Cox signs, oh, the first thing you think of is, oh, well, they beat their spouse or whatever, whereas you think of Hardy and you think of Ray Rice, you think of the same thing. So this just to me comes off as more of a PR move than really trying to get these guys to not play in this league. And that to me is a problem, because if we're going to give Chris Rainey a second chance, if we're going to give Justin Cox a second chance, why does Greg Hardy and Ray Rice not afforded those same second chances? Now, Hardy is, like I said, has not been remorseful at all about this, so that could be a reason. He's shown that he hasn't learned anything from it, but Ray Rice has. Ray Rice has been very, very remorseful about what happened. He's like, yeah, I made a mistake. I screwed up. It cost me my livelihood. I want to make this better. He's even said that if he gets signed by an NFL team, he will give his entire salary to battered women's shelters and domestic violence charities and stuff like that. So he's trying to make good, and he's not allowed to play. The other two guys are, I just have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with Greg Hardy not playing in the CFL. I hope he never plays up here. He's a complete, the words I want to say, I would have to just, it would be a string of bleeps. So it's not even worth it. But I just don't like how the league is not enforcing this on an even playing field. It seems like they're just kind of picking and choosing where they want to take a stand.
There'd be a big outrage if they sign these guys just because they're high profile cases and all that stuff. And you mentioned Rainey and Cox. I'm willing to bet that most CFL fans don't even know about their past. So, it's kind of a double standard. If you're not a famous person and your arrests were under the radar, then it's okay. But if it's going to bring a lot of bad attention to the league, then it's not okay. So, yeah, it is a bit of a double standard, and it doesn't seem right. Either way, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter if you're famous or not. It's still you still did allegedly what you got arrested for. So it shouldn't be just because you're famous and a high profile case. It shouldn't be a different standard.
Domestic violence is domestic violence. And if the league wants to clean this up and get this out of the game, I applaud them. But you have to be consistent across the board.
Absolutely.
Not, and that's my problem. Not keeping Greg Hardy out, keep him out. But these other guys, there just needs to be some consistency. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, so let's move on from this dark stuff and let's get into some fun stuff. Mike, Bozo of the Week, who is it?
Gotta go with Jim Popp, just for for a lot of
is this like a lifetime Bozo of the Week award?
Yeah, I think so. Just for he keeps wanting to be head coach, and that's just not his thing. His record shows he's not a very good head coach. We've established this over the years, and he just keeps getting back in there. Stick to the GM role, Jim Popp. Just that's what your talents are for. Not head coach. You're not a head coach. Shouldn't be a head coach. So just another bad performance by Montreal, and a lot of the blame has to go towards Jim Popp. And I don't know how long the leash he has. You got to think pretty long with the owner and him being so tight. He's been with the team for 16 plus years or whatever it is. So I got to go with Jim Popp. He's just not a good head coach, and it's shown this year so far. They've had some injuries on offense, but I still believe they have the talent. They have a pretty good quarterback in Kevin Glenn, and they're just not performing well on either side of the ball. It's just been really bad. So my Bozo of the Week goes to Jim Popp for, just keep hiring himself as the head coach. Just enough is enough.
Jim Pop is Bozo of the Week for being Jim Pop, essentially.
Yeah, I'm
with you. Like, he just, oh man, with the coaching stuff, it's, he's fired coaches who have performed worse than he has as head coach. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Jim Pop, the GM, saw Jim Pop, the head coach, and said, this is your record. This, like, he wouldn't keep him. So, no. Like, I don't know if this is an ego thing or what have you, but it's definitely, until he is no longer has this itch to be the head coach, which he's apparently had for forever. Every time the team, I think ever since Trestman left, he's wanted to be the head coach, and the owners just kept saying no and no and no, and then finally relented. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is one of those things where you say the owner and him are tight, but maybe this is one of those things where it's like, okay, you be the head coach, and if this doesn't work out, see ya. And so far, they are falling very far behind the rest of the East Division. We got Ottawa with 3 wins, Hamilton with 3 wins, Toronto with 3 wins. They sit with 1. So they have got to make a turnaround sometime soon, or they are going to fall completely out of the race for a playoff spot.
Absolutely. It's just not going well for him. And now I kind of see why everyone was predicting that Montreal would have a tough year. You know, I didn't see it in the offseason. I thought they'd do well with all that talent, but it's just not coming together for them so far.
Yeah, I think when we discussed it on our preview show, I said the only thing I don't like about this team is the head coach. I think the coordinators are good. I think the talent is there. But I have major, major questions about Jim Pop as head coach. And we are seeing that very, very much right through week one to now. Like, they won in week one against a Winnipeg team that I still don't know how Hamilton lost to them, honestly. I know turnovers. I get it. But, like, that's going to be that game you look back on at the end of the year and go, man, how the hell did they lose that one? But, like, Montreal has just, they've scored, like, 50-something points in 4 games. Like, their offense isn't scoring points. Their defense isn't stopping anyone. Like, it's just, there's nothing is working in Montreal. So, yeah, Jim Pop, absolutely deserving of your Bozo of the Week. Okay, did you happen to see the Ottawa-Saskatchewan game?
I saw most of it, yeah.
Okay, so I'm watching this game, and I kind of taking a page from your book, Bozo of the Week. It's not Bozo of the Week, but something came up. Like, okay, I'm just going to... The refs, the replay system, the command center, all of it. It's been bad to start this season. There have been some terrible calls, some terrible challenges that have been overturned, some terrible challenges that haven't been overturned, some calls that haven't been made that were obvious. This whole thing, to me, came to a head in this game. There were replay challenges by the head coaches that it's like, again, they're challenging things on the off chance that maybe they find something. It's funny you talk about Pop. He did that a week ago in a game against Hamilton where he challenged defensive pass interference on Johnny Sears when Sears basically did a spin to get out of the way of Nick Lewis. And then I think Cato fumbled the ball and Ticats recovered and Pop was just looking for anything to overturn the turnover. To me, that's a flaw in the replay system and that pisses me off. And then there were some, like, Chris Williams near the end of the game, very clearly interfered with, no flag. Rick Kimball was out of challenges, so he couldn't challenge. There was a helmet-to-helmet hit that Zach Evans laid on Mitchell Gale that wasn't vicious by any stretch of the imagination, but we both know, and everyone listening to this knows, if a defensive player under any circumstances hits the head of the quarterback, it is a flag. This, I can't remember if it was called and overturned or if it wasn't called and they asked for it to overturn. And they said that, no, there's no hit to the head on the quarterback. And it just absolutely insane that this happened. And then Justin Cox, who we talked about earlier, he breaks up a pass, gets all excited, starts making that incomplete hand gesture, then starts trying to pump up the crowd by doing like a little like Jersey Shore fist pump. He gets flagged for objectionable conduct. And it's like, what the f*** are you doing? Like, what's going on with the referees? And like, I was so angry at this. It's like, this entire system needs to be overhauled. Like, it's just call after call. And it's just like, I'm sick of it. Like, I'm absolutely tired of it. That we can watch these games. Ottawa and Saskatchewan had a hell of a game. And we're sitting here talking about referees because they can't do their goddamn job. We've seen it in other games where they don't do their, like, it's just, it's terrible. It's terrible. They're missing calls. Like, how many replays have we seen overturned this year? Like, we're over 40-something challenges, and coaches are correct on nearly 50% of them. The referees can't be missing calls like that. You can't be missing helmet-to-helmet calls. You can't be any helmet-to-helmet hit. You cannot go to the command center and have them overturn it. Like, we talked about quarterbacks getting hurt. That's how quarterbacks get hurt. Like, this, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's been terrible all season, and I'm for one, I'm just tired of it. I'm absolutely tired of it.
I just hate when like you said, the Jim Pop thing where he just doesn't even know what he's challenging at first. He's like, oh, well, something must have happened, you know. I hate that. I don't want that. There's a lot more challenges this year than there was last year, and they said that wouldn't happen, and it has. So, yeah, there's a flaw in the system, and it's just slowing down the game too much. I mean, we're getting some really good football this year. Really good football on the field, high-scoring games, exciting games, and this is bringing it down. It's slowing it down. It's making the game less watchable. So something needs to happen where they fix this, because, you know, they're taking away from some great football on the field. So I'm just sick of seeing it.
I've tried to clean up my language. I know that I've sworn a couple times, but I'm just the replay system, the challenge system, it sucks. All it's doing is allowing coaches to just go, something must have happened, so we need the ball back. And I was all for expanding replay, and Ken Austin said, let us challenge everything. And it's like, why not? Because it's better to get the call right than to have a bad call affect a game. But the more
I think they should be take away one challenge, you know. I don't know, like, do something to limit what they can, you know, how many challenges they can have, because it's just too many right now.
Well, and it's like the big thing to me in all of this is that the refs are missing the calls. That we would not have to have this many challenges, because some of them are blatant. Like there was a helmet-to-helmet hit on, I think it was Brock Jensen who was in at the time. Very clear helmet-to-helmet hit. When it was like, oh, we're challenging roughing the passer, I was like, oh, great, it's Campbell doing this again, because Campbell's the same way. He likes to do what Pop does, and he'll challenge whatever in the hopes of getting finding something to overturn the call. And I don't blame the coaches for this. They're using everything that they can to win the football game. That's what they're paid to do. They're paid to win games. I do not blame the coaches. The problem is the system. I don't think the league anticipated coaches doing this. I even wrote about it for Three Down Nation, that these are the unintended consequences of allowing more challenges. But to me, this all boils down to refs missing the call. The helmet-to-helmet hit on Brock Jensen was very obvious and should have been called. The pass interference on Chris Williams was so obvious. There's a Vine out there that someone took showing the pass interference call, and it's like, how does this get missed? Like, it's incredible that they keep missing these calls. And that, to me, is the problem. Not the challenges. The challenges are only a problem because of the missed calls by the referees. If the refs were better at their job, if they could actually make the calls that they're supposed to make, this wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, I agree. But with the, you know, challenging a play just to see if there might be something, I don't blame the refs for that. But for the most part, I totally agree that the refs need to be better. And they've had, you know, they've been bad for a while now. And it just needs to improve. So, you know, once again, we're talking about the refs.
Yeah, and like you said, there's been so many great games played this year. You've been to three of them yourself. Yeah, I'm tired of it. That's all there is to it. I'm sick of having to defend this league, and one of the things we constantly have to defend this league about is the terrible officiating, and it just seems like season after season, it gets worse. It doesn't get better, and the league said over the offseason, we're going to make officiating better. They failed. They've completely failed, and this is going to be something we're talking about until something, either a massive catastrophe happens, and they have to overhaul everything, or we're just going to keep going on. That's all, because at this point, I don't see it getting better without something forcing their hand, because it doesn't seem to matter what happens unless we see some egregious call decide the Grey Cup. What's the impetus to change? Why will the league change? If you're still spending your money going to the games and all that sort of stuff, why do they care?
You know, the ratings have been pretty good this year for the CFL, so it's not hurting them in the ratings. So,
and I think even attendance is up. Even though we've had lower attendance in BC, we've had lower attendance in Winnipeg, we've had lower attendance in Toronto. Like, attendance, I think, is up. TV ratings are up. They have no reason to change because no one seems to care. Everyone will bitch about it, but you're still going to be watching the games on Thursday and Friday and Saturday. So it's like, does it really matter? Like, are we just kind of screaming at the wall here?
I think so. I think you've been screaming at the wall for a long time. I'm not saying, I mean, they're trying. They are trying to improve it, but it's just tough with, you know, not a ton of money in the league office. I know they're doing good. This is the best CFL has been for a long, long time. But, you know, they don't have the resources that the NFL has. They don't have, you know, they can't make it a year-round thing for the refs. So it's just going to be tough. And, you know, maybe it improves later in the season like it usually does. You know, it's not perfect at any point, but usually the games improve down the season. So we'll see what happens. But I have a feeling we're going to be talking about them going forward.
Well, you know what? Let's just, I've had enough. I don't want to talk about the refs anymore. Let's go on to some picks. Ready to do some picks?
Yeah.
Okay, before we get to the picks, though, I've got a bone to pick with you, sir. On this very show last week, when we discussed who we were taking in the Hamilton and Edmonton game, who did you say on this show that you were picking?
I said the Eskimos.
And yet, when I just, you know, I go and I find the rankings so that I can announce them on the show for the Oski Wee Wee Pick'em group, and I find you really high up going, wow, Mike, for going 2-2, you're pretty high up there. So I click on your thing. Who did you take on Pick'em in the Edmonton-Hamilton game?
Yeah, I took the Ticats. I took them originally, and I was going to change it, but then I never did. So, yeah, going forward, I'll make sure that this team I say on this show will be the team I pick. But, yeah, I forgot to change it back last week, and luckily I did because I had a big week.
Yeah, you did. But, man, like, these picks we make on this show, man, this is a social contract that we make with our listeners. And this is a transgression that, personally, like, I don't care. We all do this in fun. But I don't know, man. I think maybe that you should be punished for lying to our listeners. So I'm going to do this. How about this? I think this is fair. To all the listeners out there, hit me up on Twitter. I'm at @JoshSmith_82. Or hit up the 3DownNation comment section when this show goes up. And tell me what you think is a suitable punishment for Mike lying to you last week. Lying to your faces, in your ears, lying that he was going to take the Eskimos. Tell me if you think he should be punished. Maybe if you think he should, whatever. Just I will read any answers I get. And maybe we'll decide what should be your punishment for lying to our very loyal listeners, Mike. Like, come on, these are the people that love us, and you're lying to them.
Yeah, I know. Sorry to anyone who took my picks and took the Eskimos, but you know, I feel like what was that American broadcaster for ABC who told that lie about being on the helicopter?
Remember? Oh, Brian Williams.
Yeah, just call me Brian Williams from now on. But yeah, let me have it, and I promise it will not happen again.
Yeah, I'm hoping there'll be some rather creative punishments for you for lying to our listeners. Yes. Anyway, still we're now heading into week 6 of the Pick'ems. You can still join our Pick'em group, Oski Wee Wees, OSKIEWEWES. Every week, man, if you finish in first at the end of the season, you're going to get yourself a cool Ticats t-shirt and a cool Ticats shirt. T-shirt and a shirt, because I'm an idiot. And a t-shirt and a toque, courtesy of moi. So after week 5, our top 3 sits. Mike, you're in third place with 1,911 points. We have Jason in second place with 2,144 points. And my friend for pretty much a quarter century now, Richard, sitting in first place with 2,306 points. I myself had a much better week. I went 3-1, much like you did, because you lied and didn't change your pick. I moved up from 16th to 11th. I have 1,544 points, so I'm still pretty far down. So I've got to make up some ground here on these people in our group, and I'm starting to wonder if maybe people are picking the same as me to keep me from moving up, but we still got to make these picks every week, and so let's get to it. First game of the week, we got the Winnipeg Blue Bombers with their new starting quarterback, Matt Nichols. We didn't really talk about that, but Nichols is going to be starting in place of Drew Willey in Winnipeg, heading to Edmonton to take on what I think is going to be a pissed off Edmonton Eskimos team. Who you got in this one, Mike?
Yeah, I got to go with the Eskimos.
Are you actually going with the Eskimos, or are you going to take the Eskimos and then pick Winnipeg when Winnipeg just happens to win?
No, I'm going to stick with the Eskimos, and I think that they're going to take it out on Winnipeg. And maybe Nichols lights a little fire under Winnipeg's offense, but I'm not sure about that. So, yeah, I'm going to go for the Eskimos, and not a runoff, but I think they'll win by, 10 points, something like that.
Yeah, I think the Eskimos are going to beat the tires off Winnipeg, honestly. They are going to be angry about what happened. And Winnipeg secondary, at the end of that game last week, every single player was a backup. They have suffered a lot of injuries in that secondary. I don't know who is and isn't going to be back for this game, but a beat-up secondary against a pissed-off Mike Riley with Darrell Walker and Adarius Bowman, I got to go Edmonton. Next game, we got the Saskatchewan Roughriders heading to Montreal, the two last-place teams taking on one another. Who do you got between the Riders and the Owls at Percival Molson Stadium?
Oh, wow, that's a tough one. Montreal's looked bad. Saskatchewan's looked okay recently. I mean, they won their last game, but Montreal's usually a tough place to play. Maybe not this season, but past season. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Alouettes to win, even though it might be a bit of an upset. I think maybe Kevin Glenn has a bounce-back game, and they pull one out. And, with Durant going down, you just don't know. Gale has been playing pretty well, but yeah, it's going to be tough for the Riders, I think. I think the Alouettes squeak by in a close win.
Yeah, not knowing who's going to quarterback the Rough Riders to me is where I side with Montreal. And if this game was in Saskatchewan, I don't care who was quarterback. You could be quarterbacking for the Riders. I would have taken the Riders. But in Montreal, I don't think it's going to be a very exciting game. I think it's going to be low scoring. It's going to be sloppy. Yeah. But I think the Owls find a way to pull this one out in 17-13 type manner. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so I'm going to take the Owls as well. Next up, we got the BC Lions heading to McMahon Stadium to take on the Calgary Stampeders. This is a battle for first place in the West Division. Who you got in this one?
I think I'm going to go with, I think I'm going to go with the Lions in the upset. It's, McMahon Stadium is such a tough place to play, but I'm going to see if I can, gain some points on some other people and take the underdog for the win.
I am taking Calgary. I got to take the Stamps at home. I know the road teams have been tremendous so far this season, but at some point that's going to reverse itself. I like BC coming off a bye. If BC wins this game, I will not be shocked. But there's something about Calgary that they haven't really hit their stride yet. I think this could be the week that they finally figure out everything. Dickinson, new head coach. Bo Levi Mitchell hasn't looked great. Jerome Messam hasn't been as involved as I had expected. But yeah, I think Calgary finds a way to pull out. I think this one could be the game of the week, honestly. But I think Calgary finds a way to pull it out. Last game, we have the Argos with Logan Kilgore, probably at quarterback, heading to Ottawa to take on the Red Blacks, who I don't have any idea who's going to play quarterback for Ottawa. Who do you got in this one? This is a tough one to call, but again, not knowing who's going to quarterback either of these teams.
So I think I'm going to go with the Red Blacks. I think that their third string guy came in last week and played pretty well against the Riders. And we don't know what Kilgore is going to look like for the Argonauts. We assume it's going to be Kilgore. I'm pretty sure Ray's going to be out. So I'm going to pick the Red Blacks at home.
Yeah, I'm taking Ottawa too. I had Toronto. If Ray's healthy, I was taking the Argos.
Yeah.
But then Ray gets hurt, and yes, I know that Scott Milanovic is a quarterback guru. He's the quarterback whisperer. He can a third of the teams in this league have quarterbacks starting that he has either worked with or produced. You know what I mean? Like Caleros, Harris, and Ray. Like one third of the CFL has Toronto quarterbacks as their start. Mitchell Gale, so holy smokes. I completely forgot about him. Another Toronto guy. So like there's a lot of teams in this league, nearly half the league, has old Toronto quarterbacks starting for them at some point. But I got to take Ottawa at home. If Harris is healthy and can play, I think it's a no-brainer. If Burris plays, if Jensen plays, I think it's a little bit of a closer game, but I still think Ottawa has the talent to pull it out. They nearly pulled it out in Saskatchewan with the third stringer, so I think they can pull it out in this one as well.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. Yeah. And with the the home crowd behind them, there'll be probably another sellout there, so they'll have some motivation behind them. And I think I was going to squeak this one out.
So I went gutsy this week. I took all four home teams, and as we've known, the home teams have not performed well. So this could be a big boom or bust week for me.
Yeah, it all depends how much you bet on it and all that stuff. So
I always go 100% confidence.
Yeah,
because why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Got to do it.
High risk, high reward.
Yeah, I'm ballsy, man. Like I believe in my picks. I think they're going to be right. And if I'm right and I don't go 100%, it would piss me off.
Exactly.
Okay, so questions. We didn't really get many questions this week, and this one I don't know if we can really answer it, but we're going to try anyway. So and I am going to apologize profusely for mispronouncing your last name, sir. But Kevin Stazala, I believe is how it's pronounced. I hope so. If I mispronounced it, please hit me up and let me know how to pronounce it better the next time you ask a question. He just wants to know, did you see a change in the routes the Ticats were running in the first half versus the second half against Edmonton? Obviously, we've talked at length about Hamilton's big comeback win, but did you see a change in the routes the receivers were running?
I'm sure there was some adjustments, but I didn't really notice them. I was just happy that they're completing passes and moving the ball, so I wasn't paying a lot of attention to if there was any difference between the first half and the second half in the route running or the routes. So yeah, I was just happy to watch them march down the field each time and score touchdowns. So I didn't really notice a huge difference. Like I said earlier, they didn't panic. They stuck to their game plan. They had a lot of passes to Tasker underneath and gained the first down. So yeah, I didn't think they aired it out a ton. They did a bit, but not a ton. And I didn't see much of a difference in the second half.
Yeah, TSN showed some stuff after the game about how Edmonton played a lot of zone defense in the second half and how Hamilton's veteran receivers were able to take advantage of that. So I don't know if it was much about the Ticats receivers running different routes or if it was Edmonton playing more zone and Hamilton's receivers finding the holes. But whatever it did, either way, it clearly worked. So, yeah, sorry, we can't really answer your question, but what I've heard and seen through replay is it was more about maybe Edmonton's defense changing up how they were guarding Hamilton's receivers than on different route combinations or anything like that.
Yeah, they were sitting back quite a bit and just letting things happen in front of them, and the Ticats took what was given to them, and they did it well.
They sure did. They sure did. So before we get out of here, usually, like I said, we talk about our fantasy team at the top of the show, but I really just wanted to get into that epic comeback win. So I decided to save this for the end. So just so you know, we won our game this week, 196-129 over the boys at Rouge Radio. We are now in second place in the CFL Podcast Family League. We sit at 4-1, 2-out. CFL is 5-0 in first place, and they're the only team that beat us, and they beat us the week the Ticats could score any points. So I like our team. I like where we're headed. We're still in the mix, still sitting there. I think if we get 2-0 again and the Ticats can play on offense, I think we win that game. So I'm liking where our football team is sitting in the fantasy league. We're looking
can't
pretty
complain
good
with the can't complain with a 4-1 record. You know, it's we're in a pretty good spot right now, I'd say.
We are. Our next game though is going to be a tough one, mostly because we're losing a vast majority of our starting lineup because they're Tiger Cats and they're on a bye this week. But we take on John over at the Blue Bomber Talk podcast, a colleague of mine over at Three Down Nation. He's got a pretty decent team himself. He's only at 3-2, so he's one game behind us, but his team has put up some massive point totals this year. So I believe he has Andy Fantu, so he's going to be losing one of his big guns this week as well. But we're going to be in a bit of a deficit here, right? I got to find some guys to plug in, especially at running back. We had CG Gable as our running back, who hasn't really done much. We've been buttressed by the rest of the team, but I took Shakir Bell as our backup, thinking that John White might not be able to stay healthy, and then Bell might get a play, but he's been a healthy scratch every week so far this season and seen the field, so I got to make some moves and find any running back to plug in place of Gable and get Bell out of there. But I also need a receiver, but receivers you can find. There's guys out there, and I know of a couple that I got my eye on that I will hope to acquire during the week to have a full complement of players so we can take on Mr. Hodge over at the Blue Bomber Talk podcast and get a win and get ourselves to 5-1. If we can win with the Ticats on a bye, I'll be really happy.
Yeah, that'll be a big accomplishment. I mean, like you said, it's easy to find receivers. The tricky part will be the running back because, you know, there's only 9 starting running backs in the league, and they're probably all, you know, most of them are locked up with the team. If not, they're, you know, backup running backs and all that stuff. So, yeah, receivers will be easy to find. Running back, not so much.
Yeah, the hard part about running backs is that someone took some team starting running back as their number two. And again, it was a thing of, like, you got to pick and choose, which guy is going to be there. And you don't want to take a backup running back too early because that'll cost you a good defensive player or possibly a receiver. So it's one of those things where because it's an 8-team league and there's only 9 teams and teams on a bye, it's really tough with running backs. So sometimes maybe you got to get a return guy who can be a running back. And I took a shot on Bell getting some opportunities, and unfortunately I whiffed on that. So it was one of my few bad picks. We're sitting at 4-1. So even if we lose this game, drop to 4-2, we're still in the hunt, but I really like to get a win with the Ticats on a bye.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it, Mike. We are done for this week. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to have a question read and answered on this show by myself or Mike, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter digits, please.
Mike_Ticats.
I am JoshSmith_82. And, leave those comments and those questions in the 3Down Nation comment section. We're always looking for them there. The longer form questions gives us a little bit more chance to get into it, but, hey, we take the questions any way we can get them. So that is Podski Weaver for this week. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.